From 12 News, this is Newsmakers.
The 2022 legislative session is in the books, and it was different than any other. Rather than facing deficits, lawmakers were dealing with state coffers awash with cash, thanks largely to federal funds. But was that a boon or a burden? Our guest this week on Newsmakers, House Speaker Joseph Ciccarci.
Welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White, alongside 12 News Politics editor Ted Nisi, House Speaker Joe Ciccarci. Welcome to the program. Good to have you.
My pleasure to be back, gentlemen. It's always good to see you.
I want to start with something that took a lot of the oxygen out of the room up on Smith Hill, and that was the gun debate. And look, Speaker, we're hearing from a lot of people, including those in law enforcement, who are very angry that high-capacity magazines, so those are magazines over 10 rounds, are now illegal. And they say, you know, last month, I was a law-abiding citizen, and now I'm a potential felon. And look, bad guys who do bad things with guns, they're not going to throw away their high-capacity magazines just because you passed a law that now bans them. And they say it's just hurting lawful gun owners. Are they wrong?
That is an argument to be made. We'll see. They're not illegal. There's a six-month window. So no one's illegal today or tomorrow. But there's a process to, I believe, modify your magazines. And magazines, well, I understand that has been the number one priority of the Attorney General. When we were crafting gun legislation, which, as you point out, was a very significant event this year, I reached out to the Attorney General. I reached out to the State Police. I reached out to my counterparts in the Senate and the advocates. I welcomed the Second Amendment community to come in and help. They declined respectfully. So we did the best we could. We followed the law as it's been written in New York, Massachusetts. Magazine capacities are not unique to Rhode Island. Up and down the eastern seaboard in other parts of the country, California, etc., they are banned. They are, you know, they're limited in terms of capacity. Magazines cost anywhere from $20 to $40, from my understanding. I don't own a gun, so I don't know specifically, but in my research, they're not terribly expensive. So there's an opportunity for people to, you know, buy new ones without any great expense. I think the Attorney General is going to do some real good, strong outreach around magazines and what you can and can't do and how you can use them.
The other bill, one of the other bills that was up for debate but did not pass, was the ban on assault-style rifles. Why didn't that happen?
And again, in my consultations primarily with the Attorney General, his number one concern were the high-capacity magazines. He said that's the biggest problem, the biggest threat to law enforcement and to the public at large. He explained to me that once you address the magazine capacities, you're also addressing the assault capacities as well.
So you didn't need to do the assault if you did the magazines?
So one of the most, which kind of flies under the radar screen with my friends in the media, one of the most important pieces of legislation that we passed regarding guns was about 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, is we require the Attorney General to report to us in the General Assembly yearly on crimes regarding to gun violence. Mm-hmm. And clearly, the information we gleaned from that first year that we got it, was magazines were the biggest concern that he had. He has explained to me, again, I'm not a gun person, so I don't really know, but explained to me, once you limit capacities, that's for all guns, handguns, concealed carry guns, yep, and assault rifles. So he felt that that would be addressed. We're going to wait for that report to come back next year. If we need to look at it again, we will, but I trust the experts involved. This is what the state police tell me.
But real quick, and I have read those reports. I read them myself.
You and I are the only ones.
Yeah, maybe. But look, like I said, Pete, bad guys, they're not throwing away their high-capacity magazines.
But Tim, you can make that argument on every piece of legislation we pass regarding guns. So bad people are going to do bad things. You can't legislate bad behavior. What you can do is limit it. I have no illusions that when we pass these bills that all of a sudden Rhode Island has this big shield of immunity around it. No bad gun things will happen. That's not the case. But what we can do is limit that and mitigate that and take some of these magazines off the street and make it harder and give the Attorney General the opportunity to prosecute bad people who get caught with high capacity magazines. So you're giving the Attorney General another tool in his toolbox to address these issues, and that's a deterrent. So what was the alternative? If I listen to Tim White's argument, then we should never pass any gun bills. That's what you're saying, because bad people will always do bad things. But we needed to do something, and I think we had to do a measured response. We'll see how effective it is. But if you look around with other states, it clearly has had a benefit in mitigating gun violence.
The other issue that exploded, Speaker, toward the end of the session was abortion, because of the Supreme Court decision on Roe, which actually came out the morning after session ended. Officially, though, it had already been leaked. Some lawmakers and activists immediately called on you to reconvene to pass the pending bill that would allow taxpayer funding of abortions for individuals on Medicaid or on the state workers' health insurance plan. Now, you indicated to some activists last weekend you were considering that, sounding out the reps, but it sounds like the Senate is not interested. Where does that discussion stand?
So I have meetings coming up this coming week. My door is always open to anybody on any issue. I'd be willing to listen to them. That's not a new issue. That bill you're talking about is by Representative Liana Kazaa. It's been around for 3 years. And the reason it hasn't passed for 3 years is there's just, honestly, there's not enough support for the bill. Now, clearly, things have changed. Elections change. Reps come and go. We'll see how it looks in the next cycle. We could have a change in that. But there was not a majority on that to support that bill. That's why it was never put in the budget. That's why there was no budget amendment with it. Realistically, I know how important it is. And now there's clearly new focus and new momentum because of the overturning of Roe. I understand that. As you know, I, as the majority leader, voted for,
codifying Roe.
Codifying Roe v. Wade 3 years ago or 2.5 years ago, and I would vote for it again. And that's, I feel very strongly about that. Everybody should make their own choice, their own health care choices. And the government should not make those choices for people. I respect that. We will get there. I hope to renew this issue in January. If the, as you point out, it takes two chambers to pass this. If the Senate's not willing to come back and they're not willing to entertain it, it's almost a moot point for the House to do so. And I'm not sure, to be honest with you, the votes are there. I think they're close, but I think they're closer than they've ever been, but they're not there yet.
Briefly, because this can get in.
And I want to go, go back to that issue one more time. You really need to unpack that Roe decision, because clearly inside of that there's attack on the privacy, the whole privacy clause, the whole amendment regarding the privacy. That decision will have long-range implications well beyond
Roe. Moving away from liberty rights. And
absolutely. And let me tell you something. I'll give you some news today, breaking on your show today. I am seriously concerned after I read that decision. I think Rhode Island needs to have a clear, strong look at having a constitutional amendment regarding privacy in the next session, so that we can't depend on Washington anymore. We need to look at it, what's going to affect Rhode Island.
So what other rights that were previously enshrined in high court decisions that might be at risk now are you worried
clearly,
about?
Clearly, interracial marriage, same-sex marriage. That clause, that precedent that was overridden after 50, 60 years. I mean, there's a whole series of court cases based on that. We need to look at that, and we are looking at that in the off session. We need to be very clear that what kind of a society we want to live in Rhode Island. Do we want to have individual freedoms and liberties here? Do we want to enjoy the stuff that we've enjoyed for the last 30, 40, 50 years? Because clearly you have an activist court that has thrown precedent out the window. It is very dangerous what the Supreme Court did. We need to have a long, hard look at that, and maybe it's time that Rhode Island enshrined its own privacy clause in our own state constitution.
Just briefly on that, Rhode Island did pass its own, as you well remember, same-sex marriage law before the court acted on that. So if the court, and Justice Thomas did allude to looking at that decision again as well, wouldn't marriage rights for LGBT people be safe in Rhode Island because that law is in place?
I believe so, but you have to see what comes out of the Supreme Court. You know, we are a state. The federal court has supremacy over that. Mm-hmm. You would think so, and you would hope so, but you know, I thought the same thing about Roe v. Wade. I never thought Roe v. Wade would be overturned the way it is.
Even when you were voting for it?
Yes.
Speaker Mattiello said the same at the time.
No, because I believe just in case, and that's why I voted the way I did. But I also thought there would be more restrictions and there would be more limitations to it. I thought they would chip away at it gradually. I never thought you'd see a wholesale overturning of it. And it was very dramatic, and it was very precedent-setting to what they did. And it'll have far long-ranging implications for this country for many generations to come.
Let's shift gears. 2 days after you finished your session, Providence Police Officer John Lugo allegedly punched his political opponent in the face. Providence police officials, they want to fire him, but will have to wait months, or we've seen this with Sergeant Hanley, maybe years to do so under the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights, or LEOBOR, as people know it. You have previously said you wanted to reform the law. Didn't happen Why?
Couldn't get to consensus on it. Didn't happen in the House, didn't happen in the Senate. Last year, we came close to consensus on it. We did not, the sponsors did not support the consensus that we were talking about. I let the sponsors have free rein over it this past summer and this past year, the session. I gave the sponsor her choice of staff to work on it. We thought we had a consensus.
You're being polite, that's Representative Williams.
Absolutely, Chairwoman Williams. So I thought we had a consensus, but when I looked at the bill and I started to talk to some of the advocates on all sides of the bill, there was no consensus. I reached out to the Senate, my counterparts in the Senate. They had a study commission. They had some really good findings. They thought they had a consensus. When they reviewed it, they didn't have a consensus as well. So we'll work on it again next year. But I want to point out, in the last 5 or 6 years that we've discussed this, there have been only less than a half a dozen LIBOR hearings. So, well, this is...
Yeah, I'll tell you why, Speaker. Okay. Because police administrators don't want to suspend a police officer more than 2 days unpaid because it triggers a LIBOR. Sure. It's expensive to the town. It's very difficult on the police department. It's not because there hasn't been misconduct.
No. So, but the point is... You asked about why it didn't happen. There's several issues. Number one, the length of suspension. Number two, who sits on the board? Who makes these decisions? So we're going to continue to fight that fight and hopefully come to consensus this coming January on the issue.
I'd say the issue you've been most associated with as Speaker so far is housing. You know a lot about housing as a lawyer who works on those issues. You put a lot of money and passed a variety of bills this session related to housing. But you and I have talked about this before. In the end, if the cities and towns don't want to allow much more construction, is the money you all are putting in at the state house just going to further bid up the prices of the existing housing stock? You've said yourself it's hard to convince the cities and towns. Is there any way to move the needle just so there is just more housing construction in Rhode Island?
So we're going to continue to do that. We passed over 10 bills this year regarding housing, very important bills. We put $250 million in. The governor allocated that in his budget. We kept every dime in. We kind of allocated inside that $250. Well, there's $10 million that goes to Crossroads for a homeless wing or shelter to be constructed. There are other things we're looking at, including incentivizing the housing authorities of Rhode Island. There are 30 housing authorities to increase their housing stock. There's some incentive money in there to do that. There's incentive money in to create a new public housing component. We're going to let Josh Stahl, the new housing secretary, one of the bills we talked about, raises his profile significantly in his powers and duties. I believe the governor will be appointing him to the Rhode Island Housing Board at some point in the future. So we need to have one person accountable. But getting back to what you said, housing is an important thing. Even in the Channel 12 poll, I think it was over 90%. Mm-hmm. Percent of people mm-hmm. want to talk about housing. I've done polling. It shows just the same number in my district as well.
What else does that poll show?
All good things. All good things. So the reality clearly is that we need to do something. We hopefully will do that. I have a land use committee that I expect big pieces of legislation to come out for next session on that. We're going to incentivize it so cities and towns do that. And ultimately, if they decide not to do it, we need to look at allocating city and town funding. If they don't want to do housing in their community, maybe we can adjust their aid to reallocate into some of the other communities that do
it. Boy, I can just imagine the Speaker reps trooping through your office saying, you can't cut my community. I'm going to lose this fall because if you cut the aid because we won't build that apartment building, my constituents are going to be mad. How do you navigate that?
We need to address the issue. If I'm all ears, I'm a type of person that's very collaborative. If you've got good ideas or anybody does, I'm willing to listen to them. But every city and town has to step up. We need to look at this thing differently. There are 49 other states addressing this issue. Rhode Island is not unique to this. So what are the other cities and towns doing and the other states doing? We need to look at this opportunity. We cannot do nothing. Doing nothing is not an option.
We have to go to a commercial break, Speaker, but before we do, I do want to ask you about this. State Rep Carlos Tabon of Pawtucket stopped showing up for the final 7 weeks of the legislative session following a Target 12 investigation in May that looked at his financial and business dealings. The report, as you know, detailed a long list of people, many of them immigrants, who said they got burned doing business with Tabon over the years. You acted quickly. You moved him off the House Finance Committee, all of that. But I am wondering if you're okay with him abandoning his representation of the people in the district like he did.
He has to make those choices. That's between him and the voters. I've only spoken to him once since that, your report came out, which he told me several weeks ago he was not going to run again, and he was going to concentrate on his family and the issues that you raised in your report, and he was addressing them. Ultimately, he has to make that decision, in terms of what's best for his family and his constituents, but he is not running for re-election, as you both know.
Well, we should point out he's still going to continue to collect his General Assembly salary and the benefits with that.
Yeah, so does everybody who's not running. I mean, there's like over 10 people who are not running for re-election.
But they kept going to session. Yeah,
they showed up to work.
Yeah. That's under the Constitution. I can't prevent that. I can't stop that. I have no role in to cut off someone's compensation. You know, we have another representative who's had surgery, is out sick. You don't dock them their salary. I mean, I don't want to minimize it, but we get paid $15,000 a year to be a state representative, and it's a lot of work. I happen to love it. I mean, it'd be a little crazy that I love it so much, but I enjoy it, so it's never about the salary. Ultimately, the voters make that decision, and they've made the decision. I think they spoke loudly and clearly, and I think Carlos is not going to run again.
All right. Like I said, we have to go to a break. Our guest this week is House Speaker Joe Ciccarci. Stay with us. You're watching Newsmakers. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White alongside 12 News Politics editor Ted Nisi. Our guest this week is House Speaker Joe Ciccarci. Speaker, a bill that would have put a question to voters to make education a constitutional right in Rhode Island failed in your chamber. It passed unanimously in the Senate. Two dozen groups supported it, including the Education Commissioner. You said one of the reasons you opposed it was you feared it would give outside groups legal standing to sue the state over educational curriculum. You're a lawyer.
Yes.
Is that really legal standing? Is that really a big concern of yours?
Yes. And also, I feel strongly that the elected officials of Rhode Island, the executive branch, the legislative branch, should set education policy and funding formula policy. I don't believe you should let an unelected judge take control of the education system in Rhode Island. That's what that bill would do. And then also, I am concerned. We have, if you notice, the school committee races, there are more of those than ever before. And you see people very concerned about what the curriculum, what's being taught at the school committee more than ever before. Those decisions should be made locally.
Speaker, outside groups, legal standing, you just have to prove harm. Outside groups could sue if they wanted. They just have to find a plaintiff that lives in Rhode Island. You know that.
Yeah, so, but they've not sued successfully yet. And if you pass this amendment, as you put,
but Massachusetts passed this in the 90s, and I haven't heard about a lot of outside groups going into the Commonwealth and filing all these lawsuits.
It's certainly possible, and I feel very strongly that the people who have to go before the voters every 2 years, every 4 years, they're the ones that need to be accountable, not an unelected judge. Judges are appointed for lifetime. And I just feel strongly.
Do you
that
want
way.
Judges to be elected now?
No, not at all. I think we have a very good judiciary the way it is, and I'm not looking for any to reform the judiciary. But I also don't want the judiciary. And by the way,
so this sounds like a non-starter as long as you're speaker.
I wouldn't say that. I'm always listening to arguments. I met with Tim Duffy several times on it. And the other point here is this whole separation of powers issue that you guys haven't even touched upon. Now you're abdicating the responsibility of education to the judiciary because. The legislature and the governor can't get it done.
Okay, but Speaker, this happened in Massachusetts, and urban communities sued, and the high court there said, yep, you violated your constitutional rights, and they said, General Assembly, take care of it. The General Assembly, Governor Well, did that last time I checked. Yep. They have one of the best school systems in the country.
Yeah, and then we just talked about the Supreme Court. Do you really want to leave the education of Rhode Island to the court system? We don't know. You don't know who the judge is. We have a diverse judiciary, as we should, but you don't know what kind of a judge you get. You don't know what kind of a ruling you get. So it's very clear to me that I think that, in my opinion, and in most of my members of my chamber, the legislature and the governor should decide education policy. And I'll point out, this year we funded that additional $17 million. It's not like we're not funding education in Rhode Island, because every year I've been in the General Assembly, we've increased funding to education. And as Speaker, we've increased education funding significantly as well. So is there a need for it? What's the need for it, and why do you need it? You have to, I will keep an open mind as I do. I'm willing to listen to everybody and make their case, but no one has been able to make their case to me yet that why we should do it.
I point out for our Massachusetts viewers, it's a general court in Massachusetts, not the General Assembly.
Yes, thank you.
Barnstable High, they're going to kill you down there. All right, Speaker, let's talk about politics a little. Enough policy for a few minutes. You endorsed Governor McKee last weekend, and you got him over the finish line to win the state party endorsement, whether you decide to take credit for that or not. I know how the state party works. The governor's poll numbers weren't great in the Globe poll that came out this week, 20%. We had him a little higher, but, he doesn't have a big head of steam right now. What do you advise the governor's political team, especially since he's your candidate now, to get across the finish line in this pretty hotly contested primary?
first of all, he's got a good team. They can make their own decisions. No one has asked me for opinion other than Ted Nesi. But I just think he should get out and engage. I think that you should get out early. I think he should get on the air with some media, whether it's, you know, cable media, radio, some advertisements on your station, everyone else's station. But I think that he needs to do that. I think that that's important. Now, the campaign is very short. We're talking practically 60 days, maybe 70 days, between 60 and 70 days before the primary. So it's a very short window, and he needs to engage. He needs to, you know, the General Assembly session is over. He needs to get out into the community, and he needs to engage with people and get his TV up and running.
One of his opponents, Secretary of State Gorbea, she is proposing, if she is elected, an increase in Rhode Island's corporate tax from 7% to 8%. That immediately drew criticism from both the governor and Helena Foulkes, her two opponents. That would have to go through the General Assembly. I've seen new governor's tax plans fall flat before. Would the General Assembly consider upping business taxes next year if that comes in the budget?
We'd look at it and see where we are. Every year is different. It depends on the revenue numbers. I mean, there has been proposals to increase taxing on high-income earners in Rhode Island. We look at where we are at that time. I'm not a big fan of raising taxes. I've done 3 budgets in 18 months. I have not raised taxes. I'm proud of that fact. Matter of fact, this year in our budget, we've decreased taxes. We've eliminated the car tax early. We've gave a tax credit and a tax cut to people who have children, $250 per child up to 3 children. We've eliminated military pension taxes. We've increased the exemption on all retirement taxes as well. And, you know, I want to give a shout out to a Warwick guy who's been very active in the car tax. That's that Rob Cody. I call him the car tax guru. He started that movement 10 years ago. And he said to me, "You'll never do it. You'll never get it done. Not only did we do it, we got it done. We got it done early." But it was his activism that brought that issue to the public's consciousness.
I've gotten off of Nellie Gorbea a little.
I'll go back. I'm sorry.
But just so you would be open to an increase of the corporate tax.
I never give absolutes because I think that you get yourself in trouble politically, and we're being taped. So you'll play this tape a year from now,
absolutely,
and you'll say Sabika said he wouldn't do this. Sabika said he would do this. It all depends on where we are in the environment right now. But I think the Rhode Island economy is strong and getting stronger. I would hope we'd never have to raise taxes. I'm not a big fan of raising taxes. I think they're unintended consequences, but I never say never because you have to see where we are in terms of revenue and spending and what the needs are. You know, we could have another pandemic. We don't know that yet. Scary enough.
I hope you know. Yeah, don't say it. Let's talk about the second district race, which is your district. A lot of us thought you might have been a candidate for that. You decided not to, which opened the door for Seth Magaziner. He's down in the polls. None of the other Democrats are doing any better. Alan Fung's out front right now. How concerned are you your party could lose that seat after 30 years?
I am concerned. That's why I endorsed Seth Magaziner. By the way, all the other candidates I know, Representative Siegel, Joy Fox, I've had relationships and friendships with them. But at the end of the day, I think Seth Magaziner is the strongest Democratic candidate we could put up for that seat. That's why I endorsed him. I am concerned about that, especially what's happening in Washington. I think we need to send Seth Magaziner to join Jack Reed, Sheldon Whitehouse, and David Cicilline. We have a very strong congressional delegation, and I think he'll be a good part of that.
Do you wish you had changed the outline of the second congressional district more now that, you know, you see the Globe poll?
None whatsoever. I took a very hands-off approach on redistricting. A lot of people thought I'd be very heavy-handed and start carving people in and out of districts. I let the numbers dictate where they were, and they made that decision. I would point out that both Jim Langevin and David Cicilline were included in that process. You know, I opened that process up to everybody, from the public to the incumbents to the reps to the senators. I did not go down there and change one line for anybody,
Jim Langevin,
including my own district.
People around Jim Langevin have tried, you know, because there's been grumbling that Jim Langevin didn't give everyone enough of a heads up so that you could maybe make that a little more friendly to Democrats in redistricting, as speakers have in other parts of the country. His people claim there was some advance notice, but it doesn't sound like you knew long, but, you know, early on in the map drawing process.
No, I knew in January. I had some private conversations with Congressman Langevin, and he indicated to me that he was on the fence and he would make his decision after talking to his family and his close staff members. And he, to be quite honest with you, he encouraged me to run. Mm. And I did think about it, but at the end of the day, I love being Speaker. I love staying in Rhode Island. I plan to be Speaker for a long time, you know, with the help of the voters and my colleagues in the General Assembly. They have to elect me. I've got 3 elections. I've got a primary, general, and I got hopefully one for Speaker.
Just one quick question more on CD2, which is just, so are you saying that even if Jim Lanfin had whispered to you last April, Speaker, I'm probably not going to run, you better be careful with how you draw CD2 for the next 10 years, you would have still said, you know, John Marion will love that answer, but some Democrats, that'll, their minds will blow that you would never have touched it?
What I would say to anybody who asked me or wanted to change them, then they needed to come before the Redistricting Committee. We had 10, 12, 15 public hearings throughout the state, more than any other time, and make your case as to why it needed to be changed. Was I going to sneak in late at night and change a line to benefit someone? Absolutely not, including myself. That's not the way I operate.
We have less than a minute left in the show. Real quick, soon after you became Speaker, your Warwick Law Office burned down. State Fire Marshals, FBI investigating it. Do you have a sense as to where that stands? Any new information on that?
I have a little bit of information. The FBI and the authorities have asked me not to share that, so I don't want to share that publicly.
Is an arrest imminent?
I don't think so. I don't know. You have to ask them. What I do know is that I'll give you, based on the information over the last year, I believe
less
it was
30 seconds.
It was a targeted attack. So I don't know, a targeted act. So I don't necessarily know who did it or why, and I leave that to the authorities. I have confidence in them.
It must be
unnerving.
It's unnerving, but I go on. You can't let that bother you. You have to go forward. And we've got a lot of important things done in the last 2 years of General Assembly. I'm not going to let it dissuade me from doing my job.
All right, Speaker Joe Ciccarci, thanks very much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. It always goes by fast.
It really does.
It does.
All right, everybody, you're watching this probably on Sunday. So tomorrow, have a happy and safe 4th of July. For Ted Nesi, I'm Tim White. We'll see you next week on Newsmakers.